Hey there, before we get started today, I just wanted to say a big thanks to Vitally and ChargeB for sponsoring this episode, which allows me to continue producing Churn FM as an independent creator. Vitally came in at a vital time for me, and perhaps they can for you too. If you're looking to maximize the productivity, visibility, and collaboration of your CS team while increasing NRR and streamlining operations, Vitally is the all-in-one customer success platform to help you do just that. They're also currently giving away a free pair of AirPods to all Churn FM listeners when you take a qualified demo with them. So if you're in the market for a CS platform, visit vitally.io/churnfm today to schedule your demo and get your AirPods. That's vitally.io/churnfm. And in other news, ChargeB just launched their much-awaited 2024 State of the Subscriptions and Revenue Growth Report. With an exclusive focus on retention strategies, pricing trends, and churn rate projections based on a survey of over 300 subscription businesses. I personally got an early sneak peek, and you don't want to miss this one. To grab a copy, you can visit chargebee.com/churnfm. That's chargebee.com/churnfm. With that being said, let's jump to today's episode.
I think that anybody who's not mentioning AI right now is probably not in the pulse of what's happening. I feel like this is going to be very transformative for customer success, because I don't know that there is a platform out there that isn't trying to embrace AI to some extent, which means all of the tools that we have in our tech stack, I think, are going to be more efficient. They're going to bring more value, more insights. Like, they're going to be more powerful in helping us be more, I think, efficient, more thorough, and execute a bit better than we had been before with a lot of them. I think AI as a whole is going to transform the way customer success teams work and how we work and the work that we actually focus on.
How do you build a habit-forming product?
You need to invest.
And you saw these different...
You don't just gun for revenue in the door.
This is Churn.fm, the podcast for subscription economy pros. Each week, we hear how the world's fastest growing companies are tackling churn and using retention to fuel their growth.
How do you build a habit-forming product?
We crossed over that magic threshold to negative churn.
You need to invest in customer success.
It always comes down to retention and engagement.
Completely bootstrapped, profitable, and growing.
Strategies, tactics, and ideas brought together to help your business thrive in the subscription economy. I'm your host, Andrew Michael, and here's today's episode. Hey, Christy, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you. For the listeners, Christy is the Chief Customer Officer at Client Success, a customer success platform that helps SaaS companies manage customers, reduce churn, and maximize revenue. Christy previously joined us on the show when she was the VP of Customer Success at IntelliShift and is also the founder of Keeping CS Simple and a founding member of Gain, Grow, Retain, and the CS and CS Angel. So my first question for you, Christy, is what's new that you haven't spoken much about? Because it looks like you've been incredibly busy since we last spoke.
since you and I last recorded, I feel like so much has changed. Obviously, I have found myself at a new company. So previously, last time we recorded, I was in IntelliShift, which is a telematics product, both SaaS and hardware. Found myself over at Client Success. So now, as you mentioned, right, we're a company where I'm helping customer success teams manage their customer success organizations from new to renew. So this has been super exciting. I'll tell you, like, being able to transition from a space and a product where I was not familiar, right? This was just not my territory, to coming back to a space where I was a subject matter expert has been fantastic. So I've been loving the work I get to do here. I also had some changes to some other work that I'm doing on the side. So you mentioned a brand I did have previously, Keeping CS Simple. That was kind of a holding place for all of my content, right? Like, really thematic around the simplification of customer success. Did some soul searching this past year and really analyzed like the content that I was producing and what I really wanted to double down on, and made some big shifts there. And so did away with that brand and relaunched under just my name, Christy Falteruso, and decided that is going to be my brand, right? Like, why rebrand a brand that seems to be working for me?
Yeah.
So relaunched all of my content under ChristyFalteruso.com and started to offer things like templates, consulting, boot camps, workshops, things like that. Just trying to figure out a way to centralize, one, all the content that I've been producing on the web, whether it's like podcasts like this one or others, but then also be able to create a place for tools and resources for the customer success community. So I spent a lot of time doing that. And I launched a course.
Wow.
I actually partnered with a company called Course Careers and launched a customer success course that really focuses on professionals wanting to break into tech and specifically customer success. So these are not, it's not really designed for folks who have already been in CS, who know what they're doing and they're looking to enhance. This is really a 101 or a 100 level course to really explain what is customer success, what is SaaS, how do you do it? So I spent like 12 weeks producing a course that's like 27 hours of recorded content and like exams and quizzes and all this stuff. So I had no life for most of 2023.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's an insane amount of different activities as well. And I think, as you say, like some great content you've been putting out over the years, it's really cool to see the brand. I think actually that's why I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I reached out to you. I saw that you launched the new site and I was like, okay, you've been busy. It's interesting to see. And so obviously that's like a big part of it. Is there anything that you're not talking much about, but is something new that you got in the works yet or?
This might be the first place that I'm going to say this publicly.
Yeah.
I am working on a book.
Oh, wow.
That I am hoping to wrap up early 2024. So I think it'll be interesting. I've tried to do my research to make sure that there isn't anything like it available today. It'll have a fun spin on some things that I think are tried and true in customer success, but really anchoring on stories and from other professionals in this space and bring it all together. So I won't, no spoiler alerts there. I'm not even going to give you the themes or the topics or the titles,
Yeah. But
that is, I think, my next big initiative. Already started and hope to just stay true to my timeline of like early 2024.
Nice. So definitely no life in 2023 then for you.
Yeah. No. Well, I promised my husband, I gave him the summer back. So my husband and my daughter were like, after releasing the course and my website earlier this year, I promised them that I would give them like July, August, and part of September where I would like not work on any big projects for a little while.
Yeah.
So that we could just be a family and spend some time together. And then my husband is well aware that come early October, I'm going back into hibernation and got to start working on some projects again.
Yeah, no, it's good. And it's good that you also took a step back and take some time off as well. And to be able to do that, I think is very powerful. I think not a lot of people can actually do that. I know myself, like when I get into something, it's almost impossible to get pulled out of it. But it's good that you have that good strike and balance. Today as well, like as I mentioned last time, you were VP of Customer Success at IntelliShift. You're now working in the space as a Chief Customer Officer. I'd first be interested maybe just to chat a little bit about that, the new role and the title itself, like this transition. Has there been any fundamental changes in the way that you work with your team or that you operate? Like, what has been the difference in these two different roles that you've moved into?
So I think the big difference for me, and coming from IntelliShift, I had reported into the president and the head of go-to-market. So really a more revenue-focused leader who I was rolled up under, which made total sense for that business model and that company. Then stepping into client success, the cool thing here was that obviously I was working very closely with, even when I started, I was VP of customer success and then got promoted into the CCO role almost 2 years ago now. So working very closely with our leadership team, but then also being able to just be more connected to the strategy of the business. So I feel like in previous roles, I very much owned my team. I owned my functions. I owned my revenue. And I think the new role is giving me greater purview into the entire company as a whole and the direction that we're headed, more focus on the market, on customer success as an industry. And so I feel like that's been something I've been very excited about because it's allowing me to step out of the day-to-day a bit more and think bigger picture and longer term. So I'd say like a lot of my time is still focused on running the business, but I get to say like I'm in the business, but I'm working on the business too. So it's a little bit different, which I've really appreciated that change.
Yeah, I think it's super cool as well, like getting to work in a role and then work on a product that serves that role. So having spent your career in customer success and then now serving customer success professionals in this new role as well. I think it is a very challenging one. I think it's also, I've chatted in the past with others who have held similar roles to this, where it may also be a little bit intimidating from their perspective. It's like people perhaps expect a certain level of service and customer success, and keen to hear how you're feeling that pressure and if it translates into anything that you do at work.
Yeah, no truer statement has ever been said. So I think I was super excited when I had this opportunity because I thought, wow, I get to do customer success for customer success And this is like me living out my dreams and my passions. And I'm so excited. Fast forward, I will tell you, like, this is not for the faint of heart, because to your point, you're under a microscope. Every single person that you're working with is watching every single thing you and your team do, right? Because they have certain expectations around what customer success should look like based off of what they've designed and how they do it. And they assume that because they do it a certain way, that that is best and that is right. And that's the way I should be doing it.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of judgment. There's a lot of scrutiny, a lot of pressure, to your point, which also forces, I think, interesting conversation and dialogues, because just because my customers do customer success a certain way, customer success is not a one-size-fits-all model, right? It's got to look very different and unique, because I'm in a different market. I have a different product serving different, you know, demographic at a different stage with different resources. So all the variables are different everywhere you go, and you got to take that into consideration. So managing expectations with my customers is probably been the toughest thing I've had to do. Also, like, listen, I take a lot of pride in the work that I do, and I take customer success very seriously. I love what I get to do. So it's really hard when somebody feels disappointed or let down, or, you know, again, that misset expectation. It's like, hey, I would expect you guys to be doing X, Y, and Z. And it's like, I would love to do that if I had 30 people on my team. I don't.
Yeah.
You know, I have a small organization. So I think that's been the biggest challenge here. And as I speak with other folks who work in similar roles supporting customer success, I think that that's pretty consistent across the space.
Across the space, yeah. I think it's definitely one of those things. I remember, like, similarly as well, building research tools for researchers at Avrio, it's really demanding in design. I think probably I'd say design tools for designers would be the one I'd be the most scared to do, where people are extremely critical. But yeah, I think continue your case. And I love the point that you made as well, that there is really just many different ways and different setups, and there is no single right way. It really depends on a mountain of variables, depending on your business, your stage, your resources, your customers, what is best set up for your business. And with that, I'm interested, obviously, because you get to see a lot of companies now and you get to interact with a lot of CS teams. And there's been some fundamental shifts in the market in the way customer success teams are being operated, or being operations being ceasing to exist. And I'm keen to hear how you're seeing things in the market now from your perspective and your vantage point.
I just wanted to give a quick reminder that our sponsors of this episode today are Vitaly and ChargeBee. Vitaly are giving away a free pair of AirPods to all qualified demos. So if you're in the market for a new CS platform, make sure to visit vitaly.io/churnfm today. You can also grab a copy of the latest State of the Subscription and Revenue Growth Report by visiting chargebee.com/churnfm and let them both know that I sent you. Now back to today's episode.
Yeah, I mean, I will say this year has been very interesting, at least from, you know, the 2,000 feet view that I have, right? Being able to watch the market from the seat that I sit in. You know, I think there's been a lot of focus on the install base, right? Like your customer base, because if, and I know, listen, there are a handful of companies that are thriving right now and doing really well. And I am happy to see that. I am thrilled for them. I hope they continue to grow. But the reality of it is, I speak to more companies than I don't that are struggling this year. Sales are down. And for some companies, sales really struggled this year, right? Like bringing in new logos was really challenging. Growing the revenue has been, I think, probably the hardest thing for a lot of companies. So there's been a lot of focus on how do we grow our customer base, and going back to the importance of NRR and like being able to find ways to expand and upsell and cross-sell and all of those things, which is interesting, because while that has been the focus and that's what people are saying that they want to be doing, that they need to be doing because there's no sales, what we're actually seeing play out is very different. So what we're seeing play out is that customer success teams, they're being reduced. So we saw a ton of companies do RIFs this year. So the reduce in force, a lot of layoffs. Customer success teams were part of that. We saw a lot of folks consolidating their tech stack. Well, guess what? As a CSP, I could tell you, we were on the chopping block in a lot of companies. And I know for a fact, others were as well. I speak, you know, with a ton of folks. Customer success platforms, they were on the chopping block regardless. You know what they were doing? They're moving back into their CRMs. So Salesforce, HubSpot, yeah, they're probably thriving right now as folks are consolidating, because try to figure it out in a one-stop shop. Then you have lack of, again, different lack of resources, right? So specialty roles and all of this stuff. So you had teams that for a while were really well built, developed, and designed with the intention of, let's help our customers drive value so we can strategically grow them over time. But now you've taken away people, you've taken away tools, you've taken away process and operations, and you've now increased the focus on growing these customers. How are you supposed to do that? And I cannot and will not sit by and listen to this, like, we've got to do more with less. Like, I'm not a math person, but that doesn't add up, right? How can I possibly do more with less people, with less resources, with less operations? It's really challenging. So what I've had to say is you've got to watch folks do something different with what they have, not do more with less. So that's been my whole mental shift, is how do we do something different? So what we're seeing customers in the space and customer success teams do is really start to change and redesign their model. Now, the hardest part of that is, one, managing the communication. So you've got customers who have expectations on what they should or could be getting, and they're not, because you're having to scale back. So redesigning and managing expectations and communications, you still got these really hefty targets with, I think, either it's lack of education or a lack of desire to really believe this. But we all know this. You cannot drive revenue from your customer base the way you can for net new sales, right? You can go pump all the money you want into marketing and grow the pipeline and close more deals, right? Like, it's kind of like an input-output model. Customer success doesn't work that way, right? Just because you need more revenue today doesn't mean you can go knock on all your customers' doors and demand more money.
Yeah.
If you're growing them strategically, right? It's based on, are they getting value from what they've purchased today? Is there a business need for something else, for more of the same? Do we have access to that? Can they secure budget, right? Like, it plays out differently. And so teams, we're seeing a little bit more of dismantlement because they've not been able to produce the revenue that the organization is expecting them to. So we're seeing more folks say, well, oh, okay, well, if customer success can't do it, somebody else can. Should we be giving this focus back to sales? Should we be hiring different people? Should we move to account management instead of customer success? Yeah. So I don't think this is the end of customer success, but I don't know. It's been scary out there.
Yeah, I think it's maybe not the end of customer success, but it is definitely a pivotal moment for customer success. And I think there's definitely, from conversations I've been having, a lot more aggressive approach to showing an ROI in customer success. And it's no longer just like the success side of things and we want our customers to be successful, but it's really, okay, yes, that's the goal, is for them to be successful. But the outcome that we're looking for is actually more revenue and increase in ROI. So I think there's definitely been, like, from my viewpoint as well, speaking to a lot of people in the space as well, that there's a lot more demand now on actually being able to prove your ROI in the business. And I think, quite frankly, it's probably a really good thing for the industry as well. And it's a good place to put yourself in the business. Like, you never want to be in any business, in any department, no matter where it is, where you can't actually tie yourself back to an ROI, where you're scratching it and say, like, well, what are we delivering to the business at the end of the day?
No, listen, and I think that's super valid, but I think the challenge that we're going to continue to face with is that all these things are lagging indicators, right?
Yeah.
So growth, retention, all these things, they're lagging indicators. We have a lot of work to do before you can see the results. You need folks to be a little patient,
yeah,
right? I do think that there is a way to prove and justify the ROI, but just because I go and redesign my onboarding program today doesn't mean I'm going to see the impacts of that tomorrow.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's also where it comes in, the level of sophistication of teams becoming like reactive versus proactive, and having that understanding at the start of like, okay, what are the inputs that I need to be pushing for to get to the final output? There is. But you mentioned something very interesting. I think I'd like to double click on that, is that we're in a stage now where a lot of companies and a lot of CS teams are having to sort of redesign their programs. And I think there comes two times when you redesign programs. One is like when things are going well, you're growing fast and you now need to figure out how to scale and serve new customers, or the inverse. And I think both are interesting tension points, but I think it's probably a timely thing to discuss now, because you are probably having these discussions with a lot of teams. And how do you go about starting to think about a redesign? I think, like, maybe give us, like, what is the point in time where a company might decide, okay, we actually need to change things up, we need to redesign the organization, the flow, like, and then what are some of the couple of first steps that you see people taking commonly?
So I will say that the indicator for us has been, and I won't say that this is for everybody, but like, when the current infrastructure breaks, right, or you're starting to see cracks in that infrastructure. So for us, listen, we're in a similar position as everybody else in the market. We have not, you know, grown exponentially this year. You know, it's been slow and steady, but like not hitting record numbers and definitely not where we'd like to be.
Yeah.
So I've had to rethink things because as I've watched my team evolve, right? We've had changes. I have less CSMs on my team. I have less folks on support, got less services people. So I've had to say, well, we can't sustain the same operating model we had when we had more people, right? Because expecting the same, it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
So I didn't wait for the whole thing to fall apart and crumble for us to start to do or rethink things. But I definitely saw that there was processes and efficiencies that just weren't working anymore, right? Sadly, the burnout of my team is what was the big indicator for me, right? Like they just didn't have the bandwidth to do what was expected any longer. And that was the pivotal shift for us to say, this is no longer sustainable, right? We're not driving the right outcomes for our customers. So they're not having a great experience. My employees are not having a good experience. So something has got to change. So that was my red flag of like, okay, Christy, you probably got to go do something here.
Yeah.
So for us, the big thing was trying to figure out, well, what do we still need to do for customers, right? So it was rethinking, again, with the objective of we still have to help our customers be successful so they can use the product independently to drive value from it and hopefully will stay and grow over time. If that is my core objective, what do I actually need to do to get us there? And so instead of just thinking about it though, from a people standpoint, my big pivotal shift here was like, how do we get there? Whether it's content, whether it's scaled initiatives, whether it's things like community, how do we rethink achieving the same objective in a completely different model? And obviously, when I say completely different model, we're introducing new elements to it and how we execute it. But obviously, the fundamentals of what we do are similar. But what things did we do before that we just didn't need to do anymore? Like I've talked about this extensively. I think anyone who's watched my content over time, I'll never do an EBR or QBR. I won't force my team to do it. Guess what? Customers don't want to be there. Your team doesn't want to go do it. It feels very inefficient, waste of time. Guess what? That is something that is stricken from my playbook of things I'm going to have my team waste time and resources on. It's not the way to achieve the objective, right? The objective of an EBR, QBR, build relationships and articulate value. I can do that a million different ways. So what we tried to do is figure out what were all the objectives of all the milestones and all the activities and just rethink how we do it. And so a lot of this was introducing automation, rebuilding all new content. Like I built doing a lot with very little resources. I built an entire Google site for our onboarding process, which is an entire content hub and what we'll call like an experience, has everything our customers will need to go through onboarding with a flow. And it's just fantastic. I mean, honestly, I'm going to say it. Our customers love it. I built it. It's my baby. But it helped transform how we were onboarding our customers and the work that was required from our CSMs. So it drove more efficiency. It sped up the process. It helped enable our customers to be more efficient and independently move along through it as well, and ensured greater results from the output of it. So creating new content and things like that. We launched our customer success community, CS Connect, in partnership with Higher Logic, Vanilla Forums. That's been helpful as another way and another resource for our customers to come together, share ideas, ask questions, network, brainstorm, all of those things. So we're starting to see more organizations think that way, yeah. Right? Not let's do more of what we've always done because this is customer success. We're going to see an evolution of customer success 2.0.
Yeah.
And it's sad to say that this was the forcing mechanism for this to actually happen. We should have been thinking about this a long time ago. We have been doing the same things in customer success for far too long just because they are the things we've always done. And to be very honest with you, we've never had to justify ROI the way that we have to do today. So we don't even know if the things that we had been doing were really the value drivers. So now I think we're in a position where we're being challenged to justify ROI. We've got less resources. We've got less people. We have to do the same things more efficiently, more strategically. You're going to see a lot of change in how that's being executed.
Yeah, I love that. And I also found interesting sort of the notes on QBRs and EBRs, like nobody wants to sit through that. And the point that you made as well, like there's a million other ways for you to build relationships with your customers and to show value. And just sticking to sort of the status quo that's been done for years because somebody maybe at Salesforce decided this was a good idea back in the day and then every company after them just sort of followed suit.
You know where this originated though? This didn't even come from customer success. This originated from consulting,
yeah.
Which it makes sense when you're spending the money that you're spending on true traditional consulting, right? If we're thinking about like the McKinseys and Deloitte's of the world. Sure. Yes. QBR, EBR, all day long, fine, might make sense for them. But how it works in this SaaS environment specifically and in customer success, we don't need to be doing that.
Yeah. And so you said, most of the time, nobody wants to be doing that. And you end up spending a lot of time and energy trying to bring people together,
so
book these meetings, like get people excited about them that nobody wants to be there. And like it's
no one wants to be there. Nobody shows. You've spent all this time putting together resources and content and pulling all this stuff. It's, yeah. I don't know. I don't see the ROI there. So if I'm cutting back on things that don't generate results,
yeah,
or revenue or tied to value, that's going to be first on my chopping block.
Yeah. And I think it is definitely like at this moment in time, like it's not a great that this is the forcing function, but really it is a time where I think we'll start to see a lot of innovation in the space now and in CS in general. I'm keen to hear, like, is there anything that you're particularly excited about that you're seeing change in the space and you think could be something for the future?
Well, listen, I think that anybody who's not mentioning AI right now is probably not in the pulse of what's happening. I feel like this is going to be very transformative for customer success because I don't know that there is a platform out there that isn't trying to embrace AI to some extent, which means all of the tools that we have in our tech stack, I think are going to be more efficient. They're going to bring more value, more insights. Like they're going to be more powerful in helping us be more, I think, efficient, more thorough and execute a bit better than we had been before with a lot of them. Plus, listen, I think if you don't use anything, ChatGPT is a free version. It's a no-brainer. Like if you understand how to ask really smart questions and get your prompts really dialed in, it is a powerhouse for time saving and efficiency. So I think AI as a whole is going to transform the way customer success teams work and how we work and the work that we actually focus on.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I've seen fundamental shifts in the way I'm working now. It's almost weird, like I'm taking things for granted. Like it's always the way, like I'll type a question in ChatGPT, get an answer, and then it's just like, I completely think it's normal now. Like I've normalized it, which is bad.
I got it on my phone too. Like, yeah, I mean, I'm not even just sitting here using it for work. It's like embedded in my life. Yeah. I was helping my daughter with homework before the end of last year. So what are we talking like? We'll say like April of this year. And I'm using the app like April, May, June. We're using the mobile app because we're working on this project. And I'm like, oh, I actually don't know how to like, we're writing an English paper for her. And I'm like, I don't actually know like what a good intro would look like. So we're like giving it the prompts of like what we want it to include. And it wrote like an awesome, well-structured opening to my daughter's essay, which like otherwise would have taken the two of us like 2 hours of wasted time trying to edit and like finesse this opening.
Yeah.
I'm like, she was able to just jump right in and like got the paper done because sometimes you just need help getting started. So I don't know, for me and I think anybody that I talk to, that has been like super, super powerful.
Oh yeah, it's funny. I was actually talking to a friend today who's built a product just like this. So he's working where kids can write books and it educates them along the way of like how to do grammar and how to write intros. And he was super excited today chatting to him because he just launched it and he's seeing like the response already is like unbelievable. And
You're going to have to share with me what product it is because I will tell you, having a kid in high school right now where we were like gearing up for like college essays and all this stuff. I mean, she's a math girl. So yeah, writing is not our strong suit.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. I think one of the things I love the most of all, like the prompt is like, explain it to me like I'm five. Like I'll take a concept and then I love that like with my son because he's 4 years old. So maybe I should say four. But it's like, I think the concept of how well it does in explaining complicated topics, like extremely simple. For me, it's been a lot of joy as well, like just being able to have those conversations that before might have been a little bit more confusing or tricky to explain.
That's, you know, so funny. I have my daughter's 15.
Yeah.
So I don't even think about that as a use case. But now that I think about it, my mother, she's obviously not four.
Yeah.
She's 66, 67, 66.
Yeah.
So for me, being able to explain certain things to her, it might as well be explaining it to a four-year-old. I had never thought about using ChatGPT to like simplify complex things, yeah, so I can articulate it to, oh my gosh, now how I communicate with her is going to look very different.
That's great. Yeah. So no, I definitely think AI is going to have a big fundamental shift in the way that we work in the workspace. And In customer success specifically, what are you seeing as some of the interesting use cases?
So we've seen everything from, obviously, like we'll start with basics, right? Communication, creating email templates for folks that, listen, that are being powered through automation that are used for like one-to-many communication. You could start with something as basic as that, like design me really clean, easy to use email templates, or how do I respond to this? That is like 101 stuff. But we're also seeing really cool things around account plans, using different different formulas and different structures of things like account plans, success plans. If you are like analyzing presentations and data, like how to simplify things, how to structure it well, like I've seen folks build out presentations using this. So if they've got concepts that they're speaking at an event on, how to simplify this for different slides, and like, how do I articulate this through a 45-minute presentation? I mean, it has been really interesting. And I'm only scratching the surface on like what is possible and what I'm seeing even at a high level.
Yeah.
But I think folks just using it in their day-to-day and integrating it. I think the big thing is understanding what to ask it though.
Yeah.
Like a lot of folks, I think, aren't getting the power out of it because they don't understand how to structure the prompts and like that next level, right? Almost like if you follow the concept of like the five whys, but like what ChatGPT might give you for the first pass, that's fine. But now ask it another question, like help it get smarter so you can go a little bit deeper, and how you finesse that and structure that kind of flow with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
The outputs are phenomenal.
I've thought about this point quite a bit as well, because I think it's one of those things as well where like people say, oh, it's the end of programming. Like we're not going to need engineers anymore. And I think there's different areas and suits. And but I still think like to get value out of it, you need to have a certain way of thinking and to be able to ask questions, and you need to have knowledge in certain areas. So I was chatting to an analyst today, and he started using ChatGPT in his workflow, but he still required like to have some form of knowledge, even though he couldn't use Python, like he wasn't a Python engineer. He still needed to understand the basic concepts to be able to even prompt ChatGPT. So I think it's still interesting, but I wonder when the time will shift and the point in time will shift where you don't need to have that knowledge or understanding, and it just totally gets what you're looking for and enables, because you still need to prompt it in a specific way and thing, but it feels like that's probably also going to be at some point something of the past.
Well, think about it. You've got folks like, even if you just take the two of us on this call, so 100% of the people right now on this podcast using it all day, every day. I mean, this thing is about to get super smart, right? It's watching how people are using it and what people are digging into. And I don't think it'll be very long before it is a lot smarter than it is today.
It is. Yeah, definitely. Nice. And so for your team as well, you sort of noticed that point in time you were had to let some of the team go. So obviously you had less resources. You needed to do things differently to be able to serve your customers. And you started making a few different changes. I'm also interested then is like, how were these changes managed internally with the team? Because you work in a specific way for so long. Like, how did you manage that transition now with the team going into it and saying, okay, hey team, like, there's going to be a new change. There's a new strategy. Like this is how things are moving forward. How did you smooth that over so that things went, or maybe you can tell me they didn't go so smoothly as well. That's also good. But what did that look like?
I think it's two part, right? I think it's how you're managing the communication around it. For me, and this is like any change management, right? It starts with like explaining to people why you're doing what you're about to do. I think, you know, for us, it was evident, right? We had less people on the team. We're still having to meet certain expectations and deliver for our customers and help achieve what we have to. But I'm a big advocate of having change happen with people, not to people. So what do I mean by this? Obviously, it's my directive and my strategy, because in the role that I sit, like I'm getting to paint this picture for my team. But my team is on the front line. They're the ones who are having to execute my strategy, my vision, whatever it is that we're coming up with. Instead of just doing it myself and rolling it out, I pulled them into the process and I said, hey guys, listen, here's where we're at. Here is my objective. Here's what I'm thinking and the direction I'd like to see us go. But help me design something that is going to work best for you with this as the objective. And I think my team really leaned into that because they all took a role and shared a voice around what we needed to be doing and how to do it differently. We challenged each other's, and like we really just came up with, new ways of doing what we had been doing that worked for everyone. Because sometimes I design things and I think, wow, okay, this can't be better. This is awesome. Look what I've just created. But the execution of it and the day-to-day living with that feels different.
Yeah.
So instead of having to go through those hurdles where it makes it more challenging, I think being able to involve your team, and not every rollout, not everything, every design is going to be a democracy. Like, can't pull it everybody into everything. But this is where I'm like, even if you are a much larger organization, and we just aren't, we're small. So including everyone was fine for us. But even when I had larger organizations, what I'd do is I'd find people who I know will lean into this really well and want to be a part of designing and creating something better, more efficient, or differently, and pull them into the process. And I feel like having your team understand that, listen, it is not a top-down thing. We're actually designing this with your peers in collaboration. So we're designing this together for you to achieve our goal, to help you guys be successful. That changes the dynamic. And so that's where we've been most successful in kind of rolling out these new programs and the change in the directive. So I'd feel like for me, the difficult part, not internal management and buy-in, external communication and resetting expectations with customers.
Nice.
That was where it was a little tricky.
Yeah, no, I think it's super important as well to be able to bring people along with you on the journey, and no better way than keeping them involved in the process. And ultimately, it's going to be what they're going to be working on and their roles. So having that influence. But you mentioned the problem was in communicating to customers, and keen to hear like how you went about doing that. Obviously, they've either had some former experience with you and they have expectations being set, or new customers expecting a certain level and maybe not now able to deliver anymore. So how did you manage those expectations and that communication with customers?
So net new customers, easy peasy, right? Like, because day one, they don't know any different. So we just made sure that when we structure our partnership kickoff, which is the first formal meeting that we have with our customers once they become customers, it establishes goals and the partnership, it sets expectations. We're just very clear with new customers coming in helping frame up what they can expect from us, what this will look like, what their role in the partnership needs to be, and what role we will play. So net new customers, not a problem, super easy, use that framework. What we found is that for certain segments of our customers, this was easier than others. And so if I'm thinking about our top tier of customers, we really didn't make a ton of changes for them, right? Like, if those are our bread and butter customers, and again, it's the 80-20 rule, like 20% of your customers make up 80% of your revenue. Yeah. Taking that into consideration, we didn't want the experience to be changed for those customers. So we really did our best to hold on delivering for them the experience that they have known with us and that they need to be successful. So we didn't make a ton of changes there. A few modifications and like things that we now automate that we didn't before, like some communication and steps in the process. But otherwise, they have their dedicated or designated people, and they're still getting that same level of attention and time from us. Now, as we move down further, the interesting dynamic in our customer base is that our smaller customers need more from us than our larger customers. Our larger customers, they've got resources, they've got experience, they've got expertise. They know what they're doing. Our smaller customers, for some of them, they are first-time customer success leaders. They are deploying customer success software for the very first time. For some of our leaders, this is the first software they're deploying ever in their careers, right? Like, it's the first purchase maybe they're making and like trying to roll out change management. They depend on us to help them design strategy, best practices in the platform, how to use it, like use us as like the driving mechanism for doing the work, like using our sessions as workshop sessions and like doing it together. We couldn't offer that any longer. It just didn't scale the same way. I can't be delivering weekly hour-long meetings with all customers at all levels. So I think the harder thing for us was like resetting expectations, starting from our lower tiered segment and then kind of moving back up on like what that augmented experience would look like. But we couldn't do a blanket of rollout as best as I would have loved to, is just send out mass email and be like, hey guys, this is different for you. We went customer by customer and considered which customers needed what based on where they were today. So who could be successful if we scaled back and who absolutely could not be if we scaled back.
Yeah.
And we had to bifurcate the book and be a bit more strategic. So we spent a lot of time thinking about how we would deploy this, and we couldn't just rip the Band-Aid. So it's a slow roll for us. And I think eventually we'll get there, but we had to be thoughtful about what our customers needed today, because at the end of the day, we couldn't afford churn.
Yeah.
So we had to be thoughtful.
With the benefit of hindsight, would there be anything different you would have done?
I would have started making changes sooner. Like, I wouldn't have waited as long to make the changes that we've started to make this year. These are things that, like, I think, again, hindsight 2020, we should have just been doing this stuff, right? Like, we should always be thinking about ways to make ourselves more efficient and more effective and stop wasting time. And I don't know why I hadn't put as much time and attention against that. I guess because it was kind of like, well, if it's working, you know, it's that whole saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't broken. So I didn't feel like there was much we could or should do, but it really wasn't optimized. So I would have started sooner. All of the new customers that would have started at that point with me would have been easier to manage those communications and expectations. So we'd be a little less in the hole than we are right now. But listen, it's a slow process. We'll get there. And I know that our customers will continue to be successful. Also, if I could say, I'd probably staff a ton more resources against product and probably fight less for resources and customer success. Because if you have an awesome product that is just easy to use and intuitive and is innovating in a way your customers need, there is a lot less work for customer success.
Yeah. Absolutely. Nice. Yeah. With the benefit of hindsight, I think it's always easy to look back and see where things are different. But also keen now to, as we look to wrap up as well today, get your thoughts on where you see things going now in the new year and moving on from 20 to 23. Like, what changes do you see coming?
So I definitely think that we're going to see the first more specialized roles. So I don't think that you're going to have this customer success generalist for very long. More folks are going to be moving into roles like content managers, right? Like, because again, content at scale helps your customers, right? You don't need one-to-one for every single thing that you're doing, right? Trainings, office hours, you know, webinars, all of those things help your customer base at scale. You're going to see more focus towards like content design development and what that will look like. So even having that roll up under customer marketing, but living in the customer success org, you're going to see a reduction in activities that don't tie to ROI, right? So this busy work, right? There's going to be more scrutiny around what customer success teams are responsible for and what they're doing. I think a greater elimination of the work that just really isn't required to help make customer success teams operate the way they need to drive those outcomes for their customers. Scary to think, and I hope that we don't go this direction. I'm getting an inkling that we might. I don't want to see revenue responsibilities move away from customer success teams, but if you cannot produce for the business, they're going to find teams that will. And so my fear there is if customer success teams don't really start, again, producing on that NRR target, whether it's through upsell, cross-sell, any other growth strategy, that might start to revert back to either new sales teams being able to own that again, account management teams, renewal specialists as a core function that will all roll up under revenue. And so I think we might see a bit of that. I would say those are my top three things that customer success teams, as you're thinking about the future, get ahead of some of those.
Yeah, I can see all of those. And I see as all the education and the content, it's a very interesting concept as well, because then it starts to blur the lines as well between marketing and customer success. But I think more and more, as you start to think about like different ways to be able to serve customers, like content starts to play a much, much bigger role. And I think there's different types of content as well when it comes to what's being produced. And obviously, the use cases where the ones for acquisition, the other ones for retention, and then it becomes more around retention. If you want to call it content marketing, I don't know, but
Well, it'll be interesting, right? Because I think customer success teams will be the one producing more content as opposed to marketing teams, to your point, who have been focused on demand gen for however long.
Exactly. Very nice, Christy. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you today. Is there any final thoughts you want to leave the listeners with or anything they should be aware of before we wrap up?
I would just say, again, I'm going to just encourage everybody, if you have not gone through and re-optimized your customer success strategy, I highly encourage you to go do that at this point. We're going into a new year. It's a new dawn. There's new expectations. It's also a new opportunity. So spend the time to do that if you haven't. I think other than that, I think that's my big message to everybody out there is just like, let's not make the same mistake I did. And if you have to get ahead of things.
Well, amazing. Thanks so much. And I really, really appreciate the transparency today. It was great and refreshing to hear. As always, it's a pleasure hosting the show, and I wish you best of luck now going into the new year.
Thanks so much, Andrew. Thank you.
Cheers. And that's a wrap for the show today with me, Andrew Michael. I really hope you enjoyed it and you're able to pull out something valuable for your business. To keep up to date with churn.fm and be notified about new episodes, blog posts, and more, subscribe to our mailing list by visiting churn.fm. Also, don't forget to subscribe to our show on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you have any feedback, good or bad, I would love to hear from you. And you can provide your blunt, direct feedback by sending it to andrew@churn.fm. Lastly, but most importantly, if you enjoyed this episode, please share it and leave a review, as it really helps get the word out and grow the community. Thanks again for listening. See you again next week.
And with that, I just want to say a big thanks again to Vitaly and ChargeBee for sponsoring this episode. If you do decide to check them out at vitaly.io/churnfm and chargebee.com/churnfm, please make sure to let them know I sent you, because tracking podcast advertising is traditionally very difficult, and I want to make sure we deliver value to them both so that we can retain them as our sponsors. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you again next week.